There's no greater symbol of America than the Statue of Liberty. When will you turn your face toward the east, O Liberty?
when will you? Oh, my God. Yeah, Manor Monkey is still on his hypocrisy tour of the Middle East. Oh, my God. That's where the Republican candidates hope he'll remain, at least until after the election. He really got off some ridiculous rhetoric targeting Iran in his speech yesterday, so we have a smattering of moron sounds to share with you tonight. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in. It's cold here in Atlanta, and on Thursday morning, we are expecting a couple inches of snow. So if we're not on Thursday, that means we just couldn't handle the commute from home to work. But wait a minute, that doesn't work anymore, does it? Couple inches of snow here. We can use it because that will eventually flow into Lake Lanier when it melts, and maybe we won't all die of thirst. Yeah, we have a lot of ground to cover tonight, so let us begin. There is still controversy about those tapes. We are coming to you, and the video of what occurred in the Strait of Hormuz last week. Also, I'm just about sick of this two-bit cheesy-ass media trying to cause trouble between Obama and Clinton. I really am sick of it. I really am sick of it. It is embarrassing. It is disgusting. Everybody from media whore number one, Tim Russert, down to the lowest-rent right-wing blogger, all of them trying to stir the toilet. You know, here, let's here, throw this at each other. Evil bastards. And to the extent that the Democrats are going along with this, please don't do this, Democrats. Please don't get into another circle and open fire. Please don't. But first things first, our good friend Mayflower Mike is spending some time in Europe and in the UK. And he writes, Mike, here in the UK, the people are laughing themselves silly over the boat-to-boat conflict, and especially the, we are coming for you. They use it for bumper voiceover on the offshore jazz station, like it was a joke, much like Bush. At the Three Roses pub, we got free drinks because, well, you're Yanks, you poor things. That Bush fella's going to get all of us killed before it's over, was the general comment. Oh, well, at least the British are fun-loving and decent, and they have great gardens and dogs. From Mayflower Mike. And this is from Prairie 2. Hey, Mike, the Navy is putting out more press releases indicating that the ominous voice during the Iran speedboat incident may have been a prankster transmitting from an unknown location and not the Iranians. The lead destroyer in the convoy was an Aegis-equipped ship. The really flat front is the giveaway. This is an integrated computer system capable of tracking hundreds of targets in the air, on, and under the sea simultaneously. It would be hooked into the tracking satellites and AWACS planes constantly orbiting the strait, as well as command and control in Qatar. No transmission could be made that would not be pinpointed automatically and recorded. The Navy not only knows where this transmission came from, they would be able to match him to any previous transmission that he ever made. The Navy really did get this good after 40 years of playing chicken with the Soviets. Thanks, Prairie 2. Yeah, I think the idea that the Navy is standing there with its thumb in its ear in the Middle East, in the Strait of Hormuz, for God's sake, the oil choke point for the entire Western world? No, I don't think so. That they're standing there with bananas in their ears or their thumbs in their ears saying, well, you know, that voice could have come from somewhere else. We're not exactly sure where. But it could, as Prairie 2 points out, that is so much bat snot. But you see, we live in a society now, in a culture now, where the assumption is made, since we don't have universal military service anymore, very few American families are involved in the slaughter that Bush engineered for Iraq, of all places. The family of military personnel is getting smaller and smaller and smaller because fewer and fewer people are signing up for this insanity. So the redeployments are going on and on and on, which has the unexpected consequence of causing returning soldiers and Marines to commit murders in the United States at an alarming rate. We may even get to that story that was in the New York Times over the weekend. But the salient fact here is that what used to be an operating United States military has been utterly smashed by George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Oh, and Donald Rumsfeld. It no longer exists. Maybe that's a good thing. Big Al, or Al Babe, sent this in. It's from Big Al Feldstein. It's a matter of history that when Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces, General Dwight Eisenhower, found the victims of the Nazi death camps, he ordered all possible photographs to be taken and for the German people from surrounding villages to be ushered through the camps and even made to bury the dead. He did this because he said in words to this effect, quote, "Get it all on record now. Get the films, get the witnesses, because somewhere down the track of history, some bastard will get up and say that this never happened." End quote. And that resonates to me where it concerns the torture tapes from wherever. Guantanamo, Bagram Air Base, the witness accounts of what the United States military and the private contractors that the Bush crime family have turned loose on unsuspecting tribal people in the Far East, that a record of the atrocities we are now committing should be kept. It should be there so that when the day comes that justice will flow down like a mighty river, there will be a record of what people in the Bush crime family ordered people in the United States military and the CIA and the private contractors to do. There should be a record. And there will be. Now, where was I? I feel like I got distracted. This ridiculous race thing, gender thing. Well, actually, it's a race thing, although the New York Times Week in Review section on Sunday, yesterday, tried to paint this as a race and gender conflict between blacks and whites, black males, white women. I'm getting sick of it, but I just wish that Clinton and Obama could issue a joint statement, and this would be amazing if these two senators, these two presidential candidates, could issue a joint statement that used the F word and said, "We really do think that you people in media who are trying to make an issue out of this are crazy. So get effed." Wouldn't that be wonderful? That would make me vote for one of the two of them. In Dover, New Hampshire, last week, before the primary, a person named Francine Torge, who was a former Edwards supporter, said this while introducing Mrs. Clinton. Some people compare one of the other candidates to John F. Kennedy, but he was assassinated, and Lyndon Baines Johnson was the one who actually passed the civil rights legislation. Now that's the statement, that's the comment that was made, and we'll take a look at that when we come back. Stay with us, all right? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
My God, I hear my mind that God is living suicide, singing, oh my God. Got lipstick on the collar. The whole media started to holler, but I don't give up who they screwing in private. I want to know.
I was disappointed, frankly, in the vote I got in the African-American community. I put people in my cabinet. I put people in my sub-cabinet.
Past the hour, I put people in my cabinet. Every time somebody accuses me of being a racist, I just point to Condoleezza and Colin. Jesus. Anyway, Francine Torge, introducing Hillary Clinton, said, some people compare one of the other candidates to John F. Kennedy. Now, obviously, she was referring to Barack Obama. But he was assassinated, and Lyndon Baines Johnson was the one who actually passed the civil rights legislation. You can look at that sentence as a total non sequitur, or you can see it as, okay, John Kennedy was assassinated, Johnson passed civil rights legislation. Okay. Now, that comment is particularly striking given documented fears among blacks that Obama will be assassinated if elected or otherwise. If you'll remember, that's one of the reasons that Colin Powell said he was not going to run. I don't think he was that blatant, but he and his wife, it was after Gulf War I, he and his wife issued a joint statement, I believe. This was a long, long time ago, but before he was Secretary of State, he was Secretary of Chairman of the Joint Chiefs or whatever. And he said his personal safety was at stake. Obama has had Secret Service protection for several months now. And I think even though it's not been made public, we can understand why. There are mouth-breathing, scum-eating racists in this country who have probably peppered his campaign with all sorts of death threats. And the Secret Service, of course, never releases that information. They track these rat bastards down and either arrest them or I don't know, maybe waterboard them. That would be a use for waterboarding, wouldn't it? But anyway, a Clinton spokesman then said, quote, we were aware that this person, Francine Torge, who was going to make those comments, and we were not aware that this person was going to introduce Hillary this way and make those comments, and we disapproved of them completely. They were totally inappropriate, end quote. All right, now, in the first place, why are they totally inappropriate? They are factually correct. Everything in the statement that Francine Torge made is correct. Some people compare one of the other candidates, that would be Obama, to Kennedy. They have. But he was assassinated. He was. And Lyndon Baines Johnson was the one who actually passed the civil rights legislation. That's the only one that's a little iffy. Johnson didn't pass it. He signed it. The Congress of the United States passed it. Like all legislation, until the age of Bush, it is written by Congress and then passed by Congress or turned down. If it is passed, it goes on to the president who signs it and becomes law. In the age of Bush, that doesn't work anymore. But a million years ago, in the age of Lyndon Baines Johnson, that's the way it worked. So except for that little misunderstanding of how legislation becomes law, Francine Torge, as she introduced Hillary Clinton spoke the truth. A few hours later, in a Fox News interview with one of their pig-like correspondents, Hillary Clinton brought it up again. She brought up the civil rights legislation herself. And she said, now this is apparently the offending statement to the media. I don't know if it's offending to Americans of African descent because I are not one. But the media have their asses in an uproar, don't they? Here's what she said. Quote, Dr. King's dream began to be realized when President Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act. It took a president to get it done. Right now, except also for the, let's call it a colloquial misunderstanding. Again, Johnson didn't pass a Civil Rights Act. Johnson didn't pass it. No president passes anything. They sign off on legislation passed by the Congress. But Hillary Clinton probably knows, like you and I know, that in dealing with the American voting public, you're dealing with a pack of dumbasses. So you state it as simply as you can. Lyndon Johnson passed the legislation. So let's take a look at her statement. Dr. King's dream, okay, began to be realized, right, when Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act. Okay. It took a president to get it done. Correctamento. Why did it take a president to get it done? Well, Johnson was a Democrat. The Democratic Party then, as it existed in the South, was a nest of racist rat bastards, not unlike the Republican Party today. So it did take a president to get it done, to get the legislation passed. It didn't take a president to get on freedom buses and have your Greyhound burned out from under you. It didn't take a president to try to integrate Ole Miss. It didn't take a president to have sit-ins at the lunch counters at Woolworths in Greensboro or Jacksonville. It didn't take a president to Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner to be brutally murdered and buried in a dam someplace in Mississippi. But it did take a president to get the legislation passed. So what is wrong with her statement? We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy.
Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had redemption songs.
Standing up to the flying monkey ride, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. All right, several emails come in here about this topic, but let me go. I'm trying to get the emails here in a second. This whole non-fight between Clinton and Obama. Apparently, they're trying to pull back now. Look, it's a presidential campaign, and these two people. I don't care if they're black or white or male or female. They're competing for the presidency, and for the first time in the history of this country, which puts us way down the list. Of civilized nations, Western industrialized nations, for the first time we have an African American male and a Caucasian American, is that right? European American woman, very, very close to getting the nomination of a major political party. So there's a lot of stress, a lot of tension here. This is very shaky stuff for Americans to begin with. It is. It just is. You have to keep in mind, if you don't, that black folk have only had the right to vote here in the South for about 45 years. Women have only had the right to vote for about 87 years. Blacks in the South have been treated like objects. Women in the entire country have been treated badly. I mean, come on, let's get real here. This is very, very difficult stuff. A black man, a white woman, either one of whom poised to be not just the nominee, of a major political party, but the President of the United States. This is driving a lot of people right up near the edge. Oh, my God. That kind of stuff. So in that environment, now the people mostly being driven to the edge, of course, are media people. Why? Because they smell, they can smell an outhouse from 1,000 miles away, these dirty thugs. So a statement made by someone introducing Hillary Clinton, a statement made by Clinton later that is absolutely factually correct where it concerns the unsavviness of how laws are passed by the American public, the media, the press smells that and they go, ah, here we go. Let's pit the Negro against the bitch. Come on, let's go. Sick, sick bastards. So who's going to buy into it? Well, apparently a lot of people have. I know everybody on the right has. I'm sure the pig Rush Limbaugh and the piglet Sean Hannity and the psychopath O'Reilly, I'm sure they have just really made hay out of this. I'm saying I'm sure because I would no more listen to that garbage than I would listen to some Saudi sheik try to swap spit with George Bush. Not interested. Now, during an appearance in Salem, New Hampshire, during this last week when all this ugliness occurred, Hillary Clinton refined, is the way it's put here, refined her remarks on Fox. She said, quote, you know, today, Senator Obama used President John F. Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to criticize me. He basically compared himself to our greatest heroes because they gave great speeches. President Kennedy, Mrs. Clinton went on, was in Congress for 14 years. He was a war hero. He was a man of great accomplishments and readiness to be president. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. led a movement. He was gassed. He was beaten. He was jailed. And he gave a speech that was one of the most beautifully, profoundly important speeches ever written in America, the I Have a Dream speech. And then he worked with President Johnson to get the civil rights laws passed because the dream couldn't be realized until finally it was legally permissible for people of all colors and backgrounds and races and ethnicities to be accepted as citizens. I'm running for president because I believe that there is not a contradiction between experience and change. End quote. Now, will somebody please tell me what in the hell is wrong with that statement? Nothing. And Mr. Barack Obama better get somebody with a big towel and dry him off behind his ears. This ain't soccer ball you're in, Senator. This is presidential politics. And somebody better tell Hillary Clinton to vet the people who are going to introduce her so you don't get someone who can make a statement as factually correct as it may be, that will then be riddled and shredded by this hungry dog, vicious media. So Clinton and Obama have both got to understand that their primary enemy right now, their major enemy right now, are not misogynist males on Clinton's part or racist mouth-breathing whites on Obama's part. Their primary enemy right now is this goddamn media. That's who their enemy is. And they better deal with it. Or you know what's going to happen? One of these half-assed Republicans is going to get elected president of the United States, which may be the right thing to do after all, if the Democrats can get control, veto-proof control of the House and the Senate. But that's a big if. Now, apparently somebody in the Obama and the Clinton camp have let these two candidates know, do you understand what you're doing in firing back and forth at each other about this, about some asinine statement, asinine in the sense that the media are chewing on it? Dr. King and Lyndon Baines Johnson were both heroes to the civil rights movement. They worked together. And I will guarantee you, because I was there, neither
could have succeeded without the other. Do you understand that? So why is anybody making a big deal about Hillary Clinton's statement? It was correct! And you know why they're making it a big deal about it. Because this filthy, filthy corporatist media wants to see both of these candidates go down in flames. Not to a better candidate, John Edwards. No, 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 no. But to one of these filthy, snot-eating, dog-like Republicans who would then work hand in glove with corporate America to continue the plunder in this country. So, senators, take it from a talk show host here who has absolutely not got your ear. Your biggest enemy right now is not a misogynist male or a mouth-breathing racist. It's this filthy media. This filthy, disgusting media in this country. That's your enemy. And then later that same day, Clinton, he was at Dartmouth University, I think, in the late afternoon. I like the way this is reported by whom, I should say. I'm not sure. But it was reported that he shocked his audience. He shocked his audience by criticizing Obama and his campaign, pointing his finger and raising his already hoarse voice in response to a question about the Clinton camp's pollster, Mark Penn, wrongly insisting initially that Mr. Obama had gotten no bounce out of Iowa. Mr. Clinton began by acknowledging that Mr. Penn had been wrong. Then he fired away in a mocking tone. "Well, since you raised the judgment issue, let's go over this again. That's the central argument of this campaign. It doesn't matter that I started running for president less than a year after I got to the Senate after the Illinois Senate. I'm a great speaker and a charismatic figure, and I'm the only one who had the judgment to oppose this war from the beginning, always, always, always," mocking Barack Obama. And then Clinton moved on to more about what he and the Clinton campaign had insisted over and over, that Obama had not received the same scrutiny or criticism about the war and other issues that Hillary Clinton has. Bill Clinton goes on, "It is wrong that Senator Obama got to go through 15 debates trumpeting his superior judgment, how he had been against the war, and every year, enumerating the years, and never got asked one time, not once, 'Well, how could you say that when you said in 2004 you didn't know how you would have voted on the resolution? You said in 2004 there was no difference between you and George Bush on the war, and you took that speech, and you're now running off on your website, you're now running on your website in 2004, and there's no difference in your voting record and Hillary's ever since. Give me a break. This whole thing is the biggest fairy tale I've ever seen. What did you think about the Obama thing, calling Hillary the senator from Punjab? Did you like that? Or what about the Obama handout that was covered up, the press never reported on, implying that I was a crook? Scouring me, scathing criticisms over my financial reports. Ken Starr spent $70 million and indicted innocent people to find out that I wouldn't take a nickel to see the cow jump over the moon. But the idea that one of these campaigns is positive and the other is negative, when I know the reverse is true, and I've seen it, and I've been blistered by it for months, is a little tough to take just because of the sanitizing coverage that's in the media. That doesn't mean the facts aren't out there." End quote. Now, when you get right down to it, Jesus, God, I'm defending the Clintons, which I can't, you know, I can't do that. But when you get right down to it, everything Bill Clinton said is true. Now, as for Clinton's pounding away over Obama's war stances over the years, Obama had a response. And I'll give that to you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Just look around.
listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. I'm almost finished with this. It just so infuriates me. It really does. I get kind of pissed at the two candidates too for somehow letting this get beyond the point that it did. I mean, as soon as this filthy pig-like media that we have in this country, that we're stuck with, this corporatist crap we have in this country, as soon as they picked up on this, Clinton and Obama should have taken a time out, stepped outside the campaign, and says, "Hey, wait just a second, you rat bastards. No, you're not going to do this to us." But they didn't. Now, as for Clinton's pounding away at Obama's war stances over the years, Obama had a response. He said the following, quote, "It is a little frustrating for the president to," and then he corrected himself, "the former president to continually repeat this notion that somehow I didn't know where I stood in 2004 about the war." He keeps on giving half the quote. "I was always against the war." The quote he keeps on feeding back was an interview on Meet the Press at the National Convention when Tim Russert was asking, quote, "Given your firm opposition to the war, what do you make of the fact that your nominee for president and vice president didn't have that same foresight," end quote. "And obviously, I didn't want to criticize them on the eve of their nomination. So I said, well, I don't know what, you know, I wasn't in the Senate. I can't say for certain what I would have done if I was there. I know that from where I stood, the case was not made." Now, that's what I said. Mr. Clinton always leaves that out. "And you know," Obama went on, "I understand why he's frustrated, but at some point, since we've corrected him repeatedly on this, and he keeps on repeating it, you know, it tells me that he's just more interested in trying to muddy the waters than actually talk fairly about my record," end quote. Now, in the great contest of weasel words, of which Hillary Clinton is probably at the top of the heap in terms of a politician seeking to get elected, whether it's to the Senate in New York or the President of the United States, Presidency of the United States, Hillary Clinton is the king of weasel words. That's one thing she learned from Slick Willie, how to use weasel words. But I'll tell you what, Barack Obama comes in a damn close second with this one. He does. Given the fact of what he said to Tim Russert in response to Russert saying, "Well, you know, you were opposed to the war. What do you make of the fact that that Kerry," and he was referring to Kerry and Edwards, "didn't have the same foresight. They both voted for the war resolution. Hell, I think Edwards even co-sponsored it. One of the co-sponsors." And Barack Obama said, "Well, I don't know what, you know, I wasn't in the Senate at the time. I can't say for certain what I would have done if I was there. I know that from where I stood, the case was not made." Clinton always leaves that out. Now, what Clinton says is essentially correct. Clinton says, "How could you say that when you said in 2004 you didn't know how you would have voted on the resolution, that you were against it?" Now, that's fair on Clinton's part. Clinton all of a sudden has got to parse weasel words, and he's the expert on weasel words. You know that. I don't care how much you worship at the altar of Clinton. You know the son of a bitch is known for weasel words. He could slip a silver dollar between your eyeball and your eyelid, and you'd never feel a thing. He is Slick Willie. And don't tell me that Hillary Clinton and or her advisors have not picked up on it. And don't tell me that Barack Obama, now that he's in the big leagues running for President of the United States, is no longer the Illinois Senate, that he hasn't picked up on it. So either they're all right, or they're all wrong. Or they're all both right and wrong. And such is the nature of this kind of political battle. But in the meantime, you see, to Clinton and Obama's detriment, they have been forced into one of those famous media games, let's you and him fight. Let's you and him fight. The country is going down the crapper, and this filthy media, when it should be working its ass off to undo the damage it's done for 7 years in supporting this corrupt Bush crime family, instead of doing everything it can, that's right, everything it can, to get Democrats elected. And what does that mean? That means staying neutral and letting the people understand how filthy this Bush regime has been. And how much better even somebody like Hillary Clinton would be. I know, I wouldn't vote for her if you held a gun to my head. Because she's Bush light. But the emphasis is on the word light. She's not Bush. So don't send me any emails about that, please. Oh, God. I just hate him. Oh, by the way, it's just crossing the wires, I guess. Tomorrow's MSNBC debate, Representative Dennis Kucinich has won his lawsuit against NBC. And he's been granted permission to participate in the debate, a debate just days after he was uninvited, it says here. A Nevada judge said today that Democratic presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich must be included in tomorrow's debate in Nevada. The judge said if Kucinich is excluded, he'll issue an injunction stopping the televised debate. Now, how about that? That means, of course, that Kucinich will be there 9 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. We'll carry some of that. Yeah, we'll carry some of that live. Apparently, MSNBC will appeal the decision. Why would they appeal the decision? Christ, there's only three people involved in that, isn't it? Just Clinton, Obama, and Edwards? Why not include Dennis? Don't be stupid, Malloy. Don't sound like a Republican. Lord have mercy. What, we're only finished the first hour and I already feel my blood pressure up 80 points? Oh, well, stick around. It's going to get even more intense here on the Malloy program right after the break. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. Hour two of the Malloy program here on Nova M Radio Network. Oh, my God, you stayed. Bless your heart. I always worry about these top-of-the-hour breaks. Oh, Jesus, there goes everybody. All right, let's get a couple of calls in here regarding Hillary and Obama and the media, starting with Robert, who's Robert's calling from Maryland, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Robert.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right.
Hey, listen, you were talking about the media building up this whole thing between Hillary and Obama.
Right, right.
Yeah, I really think that it's a terrible shame because I think it's taken too much away from Edwards. I was watching Bill Maher the other night, and the journalist, Matt Taibbi, is that his name? He's a journalist for Rolling Stone magazine.
Right.
He spoke from his heart. He said the only candidate that is really putting across a message that is really reaching people is Edwards. And the media is wasting all of his time with
this. Well, you can't say that. Robert, you can't do that. See, that's another example. Robert listens to us on Sirius, and we don't originate at Sirius Satellite Radio or XM Satellite Radio. So, Robert, you can't use that particular word. I don't know why, but you can't. But I hear what you're saying. He used the BS word, in case you're interested. And you know, what he was saying was that the only candidate really focused on what America needs right now, and I agree, is John Edwards. But the media has only been focusing on this BS, and Robert used the real word, between Clinton and Obama. And I agree. It's just how you say it, Robert. Or anybody. Come on, guys. No, it's easy to forget because a lot of people do listen to us on Sirius and XM. And you can say, if your program originates there, if it's only for Sirius or XM subscribers, you can say pretty much anything you want. Jeremiah is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Jeremiah.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on. Hi.
Oh, hi. Mike Malloy. Thanks for being on, letting me on the show. I really love the show.
Thank you.
I'll let you know off the bat I'm a Ron Paul guy, but frankly, I just like the show and I like to get on and make a statement.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, you know, the thing I don't like, you're right on with the media. Well, in fact, you know, how'd you feel about those guys chasing Sean Hannity all over the place?
I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's the mob turning on him, right?
Yeah, those are Ron Paul supporters, and I think it's great.
But the thing about that I don't like about the Obama and Hillary Clinton throwing Martin Luther King's name around, and they're pro war and then Kucinich, at least he's anti war, you know. And
well, all right, but wait just a second. Let's parse it down a little bit. Clinton wasn't talking about war. No, not at all.
I'm just talking about how they're throwing the name around.
Right. They were talking, but no, wait. Let me get the sentence out.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about civil rights legislation. Now, most of these candidates really shouldn't be talking about civil rights legislation. The only reason they're talking about it in the 2008 run up to the 2008 election is because there is a woman and an African American male running and have very good chances of getting the nomination of their party. Otherwise, they wouldn't even be talking about it. So that's the context. In the context of talking about civil rights, even though there's no reason for them to be talking about civil rights, but in that context, it was perfectly appropriate to bring up Johnson and Martin Luther King's name. I understand what you're saying.
I guess it just stings a little for me, just because they're personal heroes of mine, and
I understand.
I dislike them so much.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. You know, the argument has been made that one of the reasons that the U.S. government assassinated Martin Luther King Jr. Was because of his speech at Riverside Church in New York. I think it was Riverside Church, where he came out fully against the war in Southeast Asia and fully against the policies that were being perpetrated against the American people in general. He left his little safe niche of, oh, well, he's a spokesman for the Negroes. And he stepped outside that and started taking on greater issues. And so the United States government said, well, time to get rid of this guy.
Yeah,
and
no kidding.
And
can I make one small last little point?
Sure.
Is that another thing is, well, she also said that, you know, talking about LBJ's part in helping with racism. And to me, it just seems kind of weird that Martin Luther King did so much, and I know he has a part legislatively, but that part is really to me insignificant because the government can't legislate goodness. They can't do anything like that. All they can do is move around property and say you can go here and you can go there. But when it comes to racism in the country, he really didn't do anything. Martin Luther King did everything as far as the movement and how people felt about Black and white relationships.
Well, that's true. That's true. But don't confuse feelings with the actuality of the law. If the Civil Rights Acts passed during the Johnson years had not passed, arguably, excuse me, Black folk would still be sitting in the back of buses or not allowed to eat in certain places, not allowed to join certain things. It's one thing to be the heart and soul of a movement, which is what Dr. King was. It's something else again to have the political power to turn that into legislation. And this is where I think a lot of Ron Paul supporters are missing the mark. Legislation is required. No, the legislation wasn't.
When it comes to government.
Hold on. Let me get the damn statement out.
All right, or I'll put you on hold. Now, let me just get the statement out.
I apologize, sir.
It's one thing to be in favor of a certain righteous idea, as was Martin Luther King and an awful lot of civil rights supporters. It's something else, again, to pass the legislation that ends legal discrimination against people because of gender or skin color. What Ron Paul supporters miss is the absolute necessity of following up with legislation. Ron Paul supporters think that the world is going to be this real nice place where everybody just gets along. Give me a break. The real world of Ron Paul is where everybody carries a gun, and if you get in my way, you son of a bitch, I'll shoot you dead. You know why? Because there's no law been passed to tell me I can't. Now, you need to get real about your support. I don't mean you in particular. You can believe or do anything you want to do. But, you know, for people to walk around saying, well, Ron Paul walks on water and he wants to abolish all these dumbass laws because you can't change people's hearts. The intent of law is not to change their hearts. The intent of law is to make it illegal to do something that your heart should tell you shouldn't do, but is your heart is not going to throw your ass in jail or fine you if you do something illegal. The law is going to do it. So, you know, this business about, well, we don't need laws, we don't need this, we don't need that, which is the heart and soul of the Ron Paul philosophy, is a bunch of naive nonsense. Don't go there. You don't live in a community of 12 people. You live in a community of 300 million.
Okay. Yeah, my only point was that, yeah, he did. All right, I didn't see it as that big. All right.
I'm not trying to get in your case, Jeremiah. Work as hard as you can to get Ron Paul elected. Go for it. I'm not telling you not to. I'm just saying what I've been saying ever since Ron Paul started to get attention, and that is at least know what the hell libertarianism is. He is not a Republican. He's a libertarian, and you need to understand what Ron Paul's deep philosophy is, not the stuff that he puts out there for public consumption, his deep philosophy. And once you understand that, if you go along with it, then go along with it. That's all.
Can I make a point then?
Jeremiah, I got to cut it off right here. I'm sorry, pal. We'll talk again. I don't mean to do that to you, but I got to take a break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Saying, what could I do? Remember that unity starts with you.
Hold on. Hold on.
Hold on. Is democracy dead? Only time's gonna tell. Get your feet.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. If Jeremiah feels an apology is in order, okay. I'm sorry for jumping like that, but this is a problem I have with Ron Paul supporters. You guys don't go deep enough. You guys and gals don't go deep enough into this libertarian point of view. You know, to say that you can't change people's hearts with legislation, well, no one's trying to change anyone's heart with legislation. That's not the objective. The objective with legislation is to say it is no longer legal, pick something, to lynch people because of their skin color. Or it's no longer legal to deny people the right to vote because of their gender. That's what legislation is about. As far as someone's attitude, if someone doesn't want to like people of dark complexion, that's up to the person with the lighter complexion. Nobody has passed a law that says you must like Caucasians. No one has passed a law that says you must like Africans. So that's all. I just think it is a gross mistake. Libertarianism. It's just out of control. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a good idea. I'll go along with libertarianism 100%, as long as the community practicing it is not bigger than 100 people. Where peer pressure can change someone's heart, and you don't need legislation, but we're 300 million of us. So come on. Back to your calls here, I think. Let me see. Arnold is calling from Georgia, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Now, Arnold, don't cuss.
Oh, I won't cuss on, you know me, I don't cuss on.
All right.
Even on Lynn Sanders' show, I don't cuss.
All right.
Hey, all right. Look, you know, I'm enjoying your show tonight because it's got some specialty to me. You know, I'm going to tell you, as a Democrat, as a black voter in this country, everybody I know who votes, and I'm talking about people in my race.
Uh-huh.
We're sitting here ready for some get back. We're not Obama, Clinton. We don't give a poop. I mean, the real voters. I mean, every voting year I go around and I register. I wear a hole in my shoes, go around registering people to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I only get 20 of them to show up. After I register 600 people, I get 20 of them to show up. So I'm not really worried about if this going to be a big issue with black people, because black people who vote is going to come out. They don't care if it's Hillary Washburn, Obama chauffeur, or Dennis Kucinich's trophy wife. We're coming out to vote. You can nominate any of those people. We're coming out to vote because we're on get back time. We're tired of having our votes in Florida being flushed down the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
We're tired of people in Chicago and in Cleveland standing in freezing rain to vote on one
mm-hmm.
lousy machine.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we don't get back. I don't mm-hmm. care who it is.
I hear you.
I mean, okay, in 2004, we had a candidate who blew it for us, who we said anybody but Bush, and he turned out to be a nobody. But at this time around, this is the rare vote that comes up every 52 years. There's nobody on either side is going to come in there on the slide.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time when people will come out and vote. I'm a little emotional tonight, Mike, but I'm so sick of it.
I hear you, Arnold. I hear you. I hear you. I feel the same way. It's driving me crazy. You know, somebody said, you know, at your age, you have a 3-year-old child. She's going to drive you crazy. No, my three-year-old child is not driving me crazy. I'll tell you what's driving me crazy is this crap out here every day that passes for this country trying to run itself. This is insane. If we don't get some good, progressive, liberal, soulful leadership in this country, then we might as well hang it up. No, I feel the same way you do, Arnold. Absolutely. It's
1865, black people were released from slavery. Never heard a word about anything like that until 2004.
Mm-hmm.
What the Republicans do? Cage us. Come on now. Come on. I don't know about a whole lot of you young black guys, but I know people my age who's indicative of who's been around. They're talking about President Johnson. What did Johnson say after he signed that legislation?
We've just lost the South.
Thank you. Thank you. You know what I said? You know what I said back in 2004 when Mitt Romney signed legislation to allow gay people, and I don't have nothing against gays. I consider them a proud member of our party.
Mm.
But what happened? I turned around and said the same thing. We just lost the election of 2004 when he signed that legislation, and the news, the filthy news media were up there, and they just showed, all they showed was gays getting married at the church.
And well, just like the filthy news media back in the 60s, they showed black students trying to register at University of Mississippi, right?
Thank you, sir.
I hear you.
Thank
you. Arnold, got to go. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in.
All right, my brother. We'll see you.
All right, take care. Keep your chin up. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ready to run.
a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. All right, Jeremiah just sent me an email, and he puts in the subject line, sorry. Jeremiah, you don't have to apologize for anything. You're right, this is Jeremiah. Sorry if I offended you. You didn't offend me. You made my point, and I feel we were agreeing in different ways. I just meant it's good to change laws for the better. For example, no black and white water fountains, but it's Martin Luther King who moved their hearts. I was just making a distinction between the man who made a movement, Martin Luther King, and the man who did the paperwork, LBJ. I still love your show, and I think it's needed today. And he is a senior airman in the Air Force, ground radar maintenance. Senior airman, that used to be what? Sergeant? No, I guess it's right below sergeant. I guess it's like an E4, senior airman. All right, Jeremiah, no harm done, pal. I wasn't like yelling. I was just trying to get the point across. Plus, you know, I'm just kind of keyed tonight from this other stuff. But no, your point is taken, and you took my point. I took yours. We're friends. Call again. All right. Okay. It's all right. It's all right. All right. Where are we? I want to get to this continuing dust up because I brought it up. Let's go to Michael, who's calling from the Bronx, listening on the internet. All right, Michael.
Hey, Mike. Happy New Year, guy.
Thanks.
All right. You know, this whole Hillary and Barack Obama thing, it is really being blown out of proportion. Here I am, a black man. I didn't see any racist remarks whatsoever, but I do see a conspiracy here, and that is the conspiracy on the part of the GOP. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is that I'm looking at it as a he says, she says sort of thing. You know, you get the picture where somebody from the right-wing media going to go to Hillary Clinton and say that Obama said this or that, and then they pull the same stunt with Obama claiming Hillary said this or that or take things out of proportion. What happens? You have the two of them firing shots at one another, and the media is harping on this over and over and over again. But then look what's happening here. The radar now is off of Bush and Cheney. The radar is off of Giuliani, that son of a you-know-what, still hasn't answered the question about him using taxpayers' dollars for his personal affairs.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is that why is it that nobody is picking up on this, that the radar now is off of Bush and Cheney? And I was just in a political chat room earlier when someone's saying that Cheney set his office on fire. What the hell is he burning, trying to destroy evidence?
Well, you
from
know,
the Iraq War?
Michael, the part of the Obama Clinton thing that really, really irritates me, the way the media handled it, what they are trying to do, and I believe this is a conscious act on the part of the corporate owners, not necessarily the weasels down in the trenches who report and talk about the news or have the talk shows like Chris Matthews, for example, but the real scum, the corporate heads who run American media. What they're doing with this story is causing common folk like you and me, except we're too hip for them, common folk to sit back and say, oh, uh-huh, see, look, you get a black man out there and a white woman out there, see what happens, uh-huh, well, to hell with this, I don't want this happening, I can't vote for either one of them because they're both hysterical, they're both going to be screaming about Martin Luther King or Lyndon Baines Johnson, next thing you know, they're going to be talking about how women got the right to vote, no, let me see, who can I vote on the Republican side? That's what this is about, it's to make people start doubting whether or not Obama or Clinton could run the country. They both could. It's just not the way I would want it run, but I don't think there's any doubt with their 200 advisors. I think the last I heard, Obama has a couple of hundred advisors who are ready to go to work if he gets elected. Hell's fire. Hillary must have 500 advisors ready to go to work if she gets elected. So it's not like
Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton are going to just step into the White House all by themselves and run the country. They're going to do what normal people do. Now, George Bush does something like that, and look where it's gotten us. But I think Clinton or Obama would do what a normal person would do who all of a sudden finds themselves in the position of being president of the United States. That's immediately bring to the fore all of those people they've been talking about for 2 or 3 years who are going to be their advisors, their cabinet members, yada, yada, yada. So it's a trick. I'm sick of being tricked, put in the trick bag. I've had enough of this crap.
Me too. I'm tired of it myself. What do they think? We're stupid and all that stuff? We've gone through this crap for like almost 8 years.
Michael,
why do they think we're going to keep falling for it?
They do think we're stupid. Media have absolutely no respect for you, no respect for me. No respect. I got to move on. Thanks, Michael. I appreciate you checking in, pal. That's the part that just pisses me off so bad I can hardly stand it. Making a story out of this. You know, if Obama's people or Clinton's people want to say something crappy to the other side off the record, you know, just say, hey, why did you say that the other day? You know, I mean, they're people. If their people want to get together, because eventually, if either one of these two get elected president of the United States, they're going to have to work together. And they know this. They're going to have to work together. They are both corporate candidates. I don't care how you look at it. They're both corporate candidates. Neither one of them is going to mount a challenge against the corporatization of this country. They are just not going to do it. Now, you can tell that, you can come to that conclusion, I should say, by looking at their campaigns, at their positions on the issues, but you can also come to that conclusion by looking at who they have surrounded themselves with. Who are their advisors? And you can get that information when you take a look at who's advising Obama and who's advising Clinton. You are left with an inescapable conclusion if you still have enough brain power to think. And that is, these are corporate America candidates. Okay, then why is corporate America trying to destroy them? Very simple. They are not quite corporate enough. Corporate America wants a Republican. But if it can't have a Republican, it will take Republican light. Hello? That's why John Edwards is getting the treatment that he's getting. He is pissing off the right people. And that's the part that drives me crazy. Bar is a progressive. Who sent me this? Rob? Robert? Progressivism historically advocates the advancement of workers' rights and social justice. The progressives were early proponents of antitrust laws and the regulation of large corporations and monopolies, as well as government-funded environmentalism and the creation of national parks and wildlife refuges. Hillary Clinton is not defined by anything within this term. It is fact that Hillary, the former president of the Young Republicans, during the time of Martin Luther King Jr., is not, was not, and never will be progressive. Point two. The war contractor lobby will not allow the wars to stop. Hillary's close relationships with the defense lobby will result in the same problems we've had with Bush. Point three. Hillary sold the war as hard as Bush and any other Republican. As seen on the PBS, Bill Moyers documentary called Selling the War, Hillary pushed the concept of Saddam and weapons of mass destruction with the fervor of the most ardent right-wing Bushy. Oh, Robert writes, and sorry for using the word BS. Oh, this is Robert who was on the air with us and used the BS word.
He said, I thought that was cool and the air was serious. But we're not Sirius originating or XM, but okay. Yeah, and that, I think, really is the bottom line for me. I don't have an axe to grind with Hillary Clinton because of her gender. I just don't. I really don't have an axe to grind because of the fact that her husband is Bill Clinton. The axe, so to speak, that I have to grind with Hillary Clinton is her position on issues, which, as far as I'm concerned, is very little difference. Okay, of the abortion issue. Okay, maybe two or three other issues. But it is no different from John McCain's. It is no different from, I don't want to say Romney or Huckabee. Who? Oh, hell, I don't know. But Hillary Clinton is not a progressive. She is not a liberal. She is just barely a Democrat.
My daddy. He'd seen the way they turned his dream around. I gotta go by what he told me. Try to tell the truth and stand your ground. Don't let the bastards get you down.
Don't let the bastards get you down.
Out by right-wing talk radio, you found a home with Mike Malloy.
Oh, yes, you have. 10 before the hour, got an email here from Dr. Sax, as in saxophone. He is a musician who plays in big band music, travels all around the world, listens on the internet, and sends me emails from God knows where. Dr. Sax emails in about Jeremiah, the airman. He says, Jeremiah means well, and I appreciate it, but we have had people who moved bad hearts for years. We needed laws and police protection. In my home, JFK and LBJ were big heroes. Of course, we loved Martin and Malcolm and Stokely, etc. They were black people and white people all over America making the movement possible. Martin has been turned into an idol like he did it by himself. It took a movement in America where many folks died, including Martin, who chose to give his life for the movement. Martin came to LBJ and said, we need to get this legislation passed. LBJ said, you make me do it. The people led the parade and LBJ was forced to follow. But when LBJ said the health of the Democratic Party and that Southern cracker said, I need to do the right thing and pass the Civil Rights Act, now that was a turning point. We could not have done it without Eisenhower passing the first Civil Rights Act, telling the military that black soldiers would be given their rights. We could not have done it without JFK saying we will get this done. And we couldn't have done it without LBJ using his presidential power to get it through Congress. Or, like you said, I might still be drinking out of a colored-only fountain. Thanks, Dr. Sachs. Back to your phone calls here. Very quickly, and this is about the last one I'm going to take on this Hillary Obama thing, if you all don't mind. Brian is calling from Bethlehem, PA. I'm sorry, Bobby is calling from Chicago, listening on Sirius. Hey, Bobby, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm pissed off. I've been watching this junk for about a week now, and I was watching TV as the whole thing unfolded with Hillary making the comment about LBJ being the
one who passed the legislation, right?
Yeah, but that's not the feeling behind what she said. At least that's not how I took it. I'm tired of being treated like an imbecile by the media. I'm tired of the media spinning. I mean, you know, I'm not the only one, I'm sure, but it just seems like they think that people in general, and black people especially, need their help in figuring out how we feel. I'm a black American, 46 years old, and I'll tell you, as soon as Hillary said that, my jaw dropped because of how it made me feel.
How did it make you feel?
It made me feel like, how dare she say that?
What was wrong with what she said?
It was disrespectful to me as a black American. It made me feel as though she all of a sudden had jurisdiction over my feelings. It's like she minimized all of the things that black Americans have had to deal with.
All right, see, this is where this huge divide exists, because when I heard her statement, and I'm a white male, I didn't get that sense at all. The sense I got was that she was trying in her unemotional, fractured way to make a very clear, salient point. Martin Luther King and lots of other folks, but Martin Luther King Jr. was the heart of the movement. LBJ, Martin Luther King, on his own, could not have gotten the legislation passed. Surprise, surprise, it took a white male Southerner to push to get the legislation passed. And to me, that's all she was saying.
Well, that's all she was saying, but, I mean, what happened to some kind of sense of some kind of forethought in before making a statement like that? Like, you know.
Well, I still don't see what's wrong with the statement. And again, now wait. Before you try to explain it to me, it may be unexplainable. You're a black man. I'm a white man. It may be unexplainable. You may not be able to explain to me the feeling that you had when Hillary said that. Sometimes you can't explain feelings. It just comes out of your gut, and I understand that.
Right. Well, you know, then maybe I don't need to explain it, but just the same as I would expect, just the same as someone expects understanding, compassion from me as a human being, I expect that from others. So if I am telling you that this is how this made me feel, and believe me, I'm sure I'm not the only one, I don't think it takes that much of a stretch to have some empathy.
No, I don't either. I don't either. And the argument here, the difference of opinion here, is not about empathy. I don't think it's about empathy or sympathy or a clear understanding of the emotions and the sweat and the love and the blood that went into getting this legislation passed 45, 50 years ago. I'm talking about, as far as Hillary Clinton's statement, it did not. There are a lot of statements around those issues that hit me in the gut as a white person. That one didn't. Now, if you're telling me it did hit you, then you're absolutely right, Bobby. There's nothing I can say except I hear you, brother, and
okay.
I respect you.
Okay, so now let's move on. I did not hear any response from Barack or his people, nothing. Until this week, I started to hear the media spin.
Exactly.
The media spun a response.
Exactly.
Not from Barack's camp. Well, so I don't understand how this is a debate or this is an issue that's between Hillary and Barack. Barack has not responded. I have not heard it. All right.
Listen. Bobby, I get you. I understand what you're saying, and your point is well taken. But I've got to break. Thanks, pal. I hear you. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
story in your eyes.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Email here from Joe and Donna in North Augusta, South Carolina, about the Nevada judge ruling that Dennis Kucinich has to be included in the debate hosted by MSNBC tomorrow night. And we mentioned that last hour, but in case you didn't hear it, the judge said he would issue an injunction to stop the debate if Kucinich was not included. Thanks, Joe and Donna. Just a shift here for a moment to what's been going on in the Middle East. While we've all been focused on whether or not Obama is overreacting, whether or not Hillary is a racist, yada, 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 yada. The Likudnik Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, told a panel today that Israel rejects, quote, the no, or he rejects no options. In other words, in order to block Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons, he's on the same page as George Bush. No options are off the table. Now, that's according to, this is reported by the Associated Press, and they are quoting a participant at this meeting. And the participant spoke on condition of anonymity because the session was closed. So take it for whatever grains of salt you want to. The statement was Olmert's clearest indication that he's willing to use military force against Iran. Now, he's got Bush over there pumping him up and vice versa. According to this unnamed participant, Olmert told the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee of the Israeli government, quote, Israel clearly will not reconcile itself to a nuclear Iran. All options that prevent Iran from gaining nuclear capabilities are legitimate within the context of how to grapple with this matter, end quote. Again, sometimes I just wish the situation would go away, but it's not going to go away. And Bush has been ratcheting up U.S. rhetoric over Iran while Olmert is talking about all options are on the table. Bush is calling Iran the world's leading sponsor of state terror. Jesus. And he's urging Arab countries to confront Iran. Now, Iran is not Arabic. It's Persian. But I wonder if Bush understands that. Anyway, he's urging Arab countries to confront Iran, quote, before it's too late, end quote. The only formal speech, according to the Guardian of the UK, the only formal speech that he's made on his seven-country walkabout or flyabout in the Middle East was in the United Arab Emirates. And he was talking about his... You know, here Bush is talking about freedom and democracy and so on and so forth. And every single country he's gone to, including Israel, practices Israel less than the other ones, but practices a totalitarian form of government. Saudi Arabia? The UAE? Kuwait? Oh, please. These are democracies? All right, let's hear Manor Monkey here on freedom in the Middle East. This was in Abu Dhabi in the UAE. I guess this was part of his speech. After the Filipino monkey, I'm coming to you incident in the Strait of Hormuz, it's amazing that this monkey had the cojones to speak at all about freedom and justice in the Middle East, but here he goes again. Listen to his trash-talking double-speak hypocrisy about Iran just days after his most recent international embarrassment.
Iran is today the world's leading state sponsor of terror.
No, that would be us.
It sends hundreds of millions of dollars to extremists around the world.
No, that would be us.
While its own people face repression and economic hardship at home.
No, that would be us.
It undermines Lebanese hopes for peace by arming and aiding the terrorist group Hezbollah.
Hezbollah.
It subverts the hope for peace in other parts of the region by funding terrorist groups like Hamas, the Palestine Islamic Jihad.
Hamas?
It sends arms to the Taliban in Afghanistan and Shia militants in Iraq.
Shia?
It seeks to intimidate its neighbors with ballistic missiles and bellicose rhetoric. And finally, it defies the United Nations and destabilizes the region by refusing to be open and transparent about its nuclear programs and ambitions.
Oh, my God!
Iran's actions threaten the security of nations everywhere.
Yeah.
So the United States is strengthening our long-standing security commitments with our friends in the Gulf.
The ones we own.
And rallying friends around the world to confront this danger before it is too late.
Oh, Jesus. Why doesn't this guy just walk over to Ibn bin Saud, bin Sheikh Saud, and just give him a great big old kiss on the mouth and say, I love you. I love you. What? While the people of Iran face repression, what about in Saudi Arabia? And as far as defying the United Nations, how many United Nations resolutions has Israel defied? Because they didn't like them. And as far as Iran refusing to be open and transparent about its nuclear programs, like Israel is open and transparent about its nuclear programs, right? And by the way, Chuckle Nuts, didn't 16 of our intelligence agencies here in the United States, that means all of them, report that there was no nuclear threat posed by Iran, at least not this decade? This little rat bastard really wants another war, doesn't he? He really wants Jesus to come back and say, George, you did a good job. You killed 3, 4, 6, 20, 30, 40, 80, 100 million people. You're going to sit on my right hand in heaven. Sick bastard. The United States, he says, is strengthening our long-standing security commitments with our friends in the Gulf. Who would be our friends in the Gulf? Well, the Saudis just got another $20 billion promised for more weaponry. Who in the hell have the Saudis ever fought? But those are sure shiny, nice toys for this royal family of the Saudi royal family, to have, right? When we had the Gulf War I with Schwarzkopf and Bush I, what did the Saudis do? They left the country. They got the hell out of town. Go fight. Pick me up at the Hilton in Cairo. See you later. Go fight. Our friends in the Gulf, okay? All right, here Bush spreads his hypocritical message of American-style liberty to the people of Iran. The people of Iran, a country he accuses of committing a dangerous act of war against the U.S. Navy. I'm coming to you! With all the warrantless wiretapping and the destruction of civil liberties and torture and indefinite detention without trial, what in God's name, so to speak, makes this little freak believe that the USA is a bastion of liberty?
To the people of Iran, you're rich in culture and talent. You have the right to live under a government that listens to your wishes.
Yeah.
Respects your talents.
Yeah.
And allows you to build better lives for your families.
Like we do here, huh?
Fortunately, your government denies you these opportunities and threatens the peace and stability of your neighbors. So we call on the regime in Tehran to heed your will and to make itself accountable to you.
Yeah, okay.
For most of the world, there's no greater symbol of America than the Statue of Liberty. It was designed by a man who traveled widely in this part of the world.
Who is that?
And who had originally envisioned his woman bearing a torch as standing over the Suez Canal.
Who was it?
Ultimately, of course, it was erected in New York Harbor.
Who was it?
Where it has been an inspiration to generations of immigrants. One of these immigrants was a poet-writer named Amin Rahini. Gazing at her lamp held high, he wondered, whether her sister might be erected in the lands of his Arab forefathers.
Yeah.
Is how he put it.
Yeah.
When will you turn your face toward the east, O Liberty?
Yeah, and glance over there at Riyadh while you're at it, huh? You're kidding me, Bush. Saudi Arabia is to gender what apartheid South Africa was to race. I'll share this with you when we come back. He's talking about freedom. Do you know that women... Well, we'll get to it when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
22 past the hour. As far as Bush in Saudi Arabia, according to the Associated Press here, his unpopularity among ordinary Saudis is astonishing. It's almost as bad as it is here. A recent poll found only 12% view Bush positively. 12% in Saudi Arabia. That's lower than the positive numbers given to Iran's Ahmadinejad. That's lower than the approval given to Osama bin Laden. And according to the pollsters, more think warmly toward Iran than America. A recent editorial in Saudi Arabia said everything Bush touches, quote, turns to dust and ashes. So Saudi Arabia, that bastion of what? Liberty? No, that, you know, where all of the Bush crime family's dearest and closest friends hang out. That's what is financing so much of America. We talk about the Chinese buying treasury bonds, treasury notes. That's what Saudi Arabia does. In public life in that country, a woman is almost entirely segregated from men. She's excluded from the workplace. In restaurants, she's penned into what are referred to as family sections. Women in Saudi Arabia, of course, are taught, when they are taught, in separate schools and colleges. That is, unless she has been declared some 55-year-old sheikh to be her husband when she's 14. She's forbidden to drive. Under Saudi Arabia's interpretation of Islam, her husband may marry up to four times, but an adulterous woman faces death by stoning. Outside her home, she has to wear the abaya, that's that black gown that enshrouds her completely except for a slit for the eyes. And according to the Guardian of the UK, in a step which Saudi liberals and reformists have greeted as groundbreaking, women have been granted voluntary identity cards for use in banks and other public places. The card brings to an end the legal position in which a Saudi woman simply does not exist. As a child, she's the ward of her father. As an adult, a ward of her husband. As a widow, the ward of her sons. You can find lots of these cases, but do you remember the Italian woman who married a Saudi and then divorced him because he wanted more wives, and she was told by a Saudi court that she may never see her daughter again? Oh, my God. Vice police, known as the Mutawa, sweep through public places and shopping malls to prevent young men and women from mixing.
And do you remember 7 years ago, or several years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, a fire broke out at a girls' school in Mecca, and the vice police prevented girls from fleeing the burning building because they were unveiled, and they would be exposed to male emergency workers. Remember that? And 15 young high school girls burned alive. I hate religion. I hate the Saudis, for that matter. Remember the woman sentenced to 6 months in jail and 200 lashes of the whip, 19-year-old who was kidnapped at knife point with a male companion and both of them gang raped, and she was sentenced to 200 lashes and 6 months in jail because why? Sex segregation in Saudi Arabia means that women attending a conference, for example, have to sit behind a partition to make sure that no eye or physical contact occurs with male delegates. This is what Bush loves. This is what all these Christian fundamentalists really go for. They really do. Saudi women are totally absent from the Shura Council, which is consultative. It is not, this is a kingdom, so there is no parliament. But it's an all-male body whose members are appointed by the king. No women. And there never will be. And then also, Bush, on this trip, he told the Israelis that he can't control what his intelligence community says. But the National intelligence estimate that said there has been no nuclear program in Iran. Those conclusions, he told the Israelis, don't reflect his own views. Son of a bitch. It's just astonishing. This guy is so bad, isn't he? All right, your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Molloy.
Too shocking to see. Trouble, oh, trouble, move from me. I have paid my debt, now won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble.
Your host for a Pience Friance future, it's Mike Molloy.
Mother, do you think she's dangerous? Tell me.
It's about 25 before the hour. Let's go to your phone calls again. Will, who's been holding on forever, is calling from Michigan. Hey, Will, damn. I think you may have just set a record. You've been holding on for 2 hours and 30 minutes.
Yep.
God.
I've held on longer, I think. But
well, I'm sorry, Will.
That's all right. I wanted to talk about the primary tomorrow here in Michigan.
Yeah, I don't quite understand how this is going to work for the Democrats. There is no Democratic primary, is there?
I've heard that only Hillary's going to be on the ballot. I've heard that Hillary and Kucinich are going to be on the ballot. I've heard that Dodd's going to be. I've heard all kinds of things. I don't know what to expect.
So you don't understand it either.
But what I do know is that a vote for the Democrats is a wasted vote because any of the Democrats is a wasted vote because the delegates aren't going to be seated.
Now, wait.
And
wait. You're losing me here. What do you mean?
The delegates aren't going to be seated at the convention.
Why not?
Because Michigan has moved their primary date in violation of DNC rules.
Oh, so you're saying the DNC won't seat them?
Right.
Yeah, but hasn't the Democratic National Committee threatened...
They've done the same thing to Florida.
Yeah, and I just don't think that's going to happen. I think these delegates will show up. You know, this is not the 1964 Mississippi Freedom Democratic Convention, or was it 1960? I think it was 1964.
That's before my time. I was born in 68.
Okay. I'm talking about when Fannie Lou Hamer, I know you've heard her name,
yeah.
who is with the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, and maybe it was 68. Damn, I don't remember. But the convention was, it must have been 68.
I think Fannie Lou Hamer was 64 because she ran the same year Conyers did, and my dad worked on Conyers' campaign before I was born.
Well, a compromise was reached, and some of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party and some of the white Democrats from Mississippi were seated. So the only point I'm trying to make is I don't think that the delegates from Florida and Michigan are just going to say, oh, okay, we won't show up. I don't think that's going to happen. Will, do you?
I really don't know what's going to happen. I've never seen this kind of thing done before.
Probably the bottom line of what's going to happen is the Democrats are going to screw around here with the infighting and all the rules and the DNC and the DLC and yada yada, and we're going to wind up with the Republicans back in power again. Huh?
Can you imagine with the infighting in the Democratic Party, can you imagine what a brokered convention is going to be like if it happens?
It may result in an Edwards Kucinich ticket.
Yeah, but it might, on the floor it might look kind of like a WWF cage match.
Yeah, that's true too.
But anyway, you know, I've decided that since the Democrats are screwing around and don't know what they're doing, the only meaningful anti-war vote on the Michigan ballot in the primary is Ron Paul. And you know, I don't support him, but you know, he's a thorn in the GOP's side. They don't like him. They just soon get rid of him. But so as far as I'm concerned, the longer he sticks around, you know, the more of a pain in the ass he's going to be to him. And as far as I'm concerned, they deserve it. They've been a pain in the ass for America for 7 years now.
Well, that statement's absolutely true. As far as voting for Ron Paul in this go around in Michigan, that's a good idea.
I mean, you know, it's kind of a revenge vote, but and it is a wasted vote because he's not going to win. So.
Well, that's a good idea. How much have you taken the pulse of your state? How much of a groundswell is there for Democrats to go ahead and are you allowed to cross over and vote in the?
Yeah, they're totally open primaries. I'm registered as an independent, but Democrats can vote on the Republican ballot and vice versa, and independents can pick either one.
Well, we're allowed to do that here in Georgia, but if we cross over, if I, as a Democrat, vote in Republican primary, that means in the general election I've got to vote in the Republican.
No, they don't do that here in Michigan.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's because Michigan is more progressive than this god-awful place that I live.
Barely. Anyway, as far as the pulse of my state, I'm not sure, but... as far as the pulse of my precinct, I see more Ron Paul signs out there than anybody else.
Now,
yard signs and stuff.
Oh well, yeah. Well, I see more Ron Paul yard signs here in Georgia. Your primary is tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's also isn't tomorrow night the Kucinich the debate out in Nevada?
I'm not sure. I don't have a TV, so you know.
No, that's true.
I smashed my TV up against the wall in 2004. I heard, I heard, I'm George W. Bush, and I approved this message one too many times and lost it.
Right. Well, I certainly understand that.
I've been really on edge over this situation with the Democrats. And
now, what situation? The one you're just talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you a quick question, and then I got to move on. Was Hillary Clinton's statement, in your opinion, you're a white male from Michigan, in your opinion, was Hillary Clinton's statement racist on any level, or what? When she made the statement about LBJ was the one that passed the legislation?
Like you said earlier, it was more than just Martin Luther King and LBJ. It was a movement of thousands of people, black and white. I don't see.
You don't think it was racist?
Well, no, right, not really.
All right, listen up. I just got a quick email from Prairie 2 regarding Michigan. Prairie 2 writes, Hillary reneged on an agreement to not be on the ballot in Michigan. All right, let me start over. Hillary reneged on an agreement to not be on the ballot if Michigan ignored the rules. The DNC says no delegates. Edwards and Obama people are trying to get everybody to mark uncommitted instead of Hillary in case the DNC allows the delegates anyway. So Hillary's on the ballot?
Apparently.
Okay. All right, so Edwards and Obama are trying to get people to mark uncommitted instead of voting for the approved candidate, just in case the, like I said, in case the DNC allows the delegates. So,
I'll consider that, but I don't know.
Well, it sucks. All right, Will, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Again, I'm sorry you were on hold for so long. We'll talk again. Got another email here from Shelley. Yeah, Hillary's the only name on the ballot. Well, what the hell is up with that? Jason is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic. Hey, Jason, thanks for holding on.
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
All right. I called to talk about our good friend Mike Huckabee, but first I'd like to read a short part out of the Declaration of Independence that could pertain to our version of King George.
If it's very quick, go ahead.
It is. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Wow.
Right.
Man, were those wise men.
Yeah.
But this guy, Mike Huckabee, earlier you were talking about advisors, and Mike Huckabee has a doozy. Richard Haass, who is president of Council of Foreign Relations. And I believe if we do have an election, this Mike Huckabee is the chosen one. He will be. If they allow King George to leave, it'll be King Mike.
I don't know. I don't see that happening. I don't think he's going to get past. He'll probably do good in some of these southern states in the primaries, but come Super Tuesday or whatever the hell it is, how far away is that? He's going to get creamed. I think Republicans have had enough of this Jesus beating. I really do.
One word.
Yeah?
Diebold.
Okay, all right. Well, you got me there. All right, Jason, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be right back. This is Nova M Radio.
That's how the left. and at Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, a couple of quick emails here. Apparently, Hillary, Dennis Kucinich, and Mike Gravel, and somebody else here says, Dodd, may all be on the Michigan ballot. Anyway, according to two of my emailers here, Randy Rhodes today was suggesting that everybody in Michigan who's pissed off about all this just votes for Dennis Kucinich. Kathy writes, Randy's thought in this, vote for Dennis Kucinich and really let the media know that he's supported, since there's no need for a pragmatic vote in this race. It could really send a message. And Ron in New York, Mike, here's a chance for Democratic voters to force the mainstream media to give Kucinich some press. Today, Randy was urging Michigan voters to vote for Kucinich. If that's the case, yeah, Ron Paul, he's got his gang, and he'll be on the Republican ballot. I don't mean gang in a bad sense, his supporters. If Kucinich is on that ballot, I would hope that Michigan Democrats will vote for him. Thanks to the crew who, once again, managed to stay one step ahead of the sheriff or the Justice Department and put this program on the air tonight. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, and Catherine Bay. I think we have time for... Charles is calling from Connecticut, listening on the Internet. Hey, Charles.
I'm coming to get you.
Yeah, right. Well, I hope somebody does.
Isn't that a game you play with Molly? You chase her around?
I'm coming to get you! I'm going to tickle you! Tickle, 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 tickle.
Tickle. Might have done that, too.
Tickle me, Daddy. I'm coming to get you! Oh, my God. Yeah, it is a game I play with a three-year-old. You're absolutely right.
Because doesn't George sound, every time he recites a speech, because we know he can't read it, and I mean that literally, he literally functions like an illiterate, a dysfunctional illiterate.
Yeah, he does.
That he sounds like, he practiced phonetically the hard work.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And still
absolutely
doesn't get them right. And after 7 years, he still doesn't know basic geography.
That's true.
I mean, when he had the questions during the 2000s, and he didn't know the leaders of anybody, and it wasn't important.
Well, I like his statement where he talks about two states, Israel and Palestine, living side by side with Iraq.
I wonder what his map looks like.
Probably the lower leg of somebody severely afflicted with varicose veins.
I mean, if a scientist sat him down and talked to him about diabetes, he would want to bomb the Isle of Langhorne.
He would want to do what? Bomb what?
The Isle of Langhorne. In the body. Ask Kathy. What's the pancreas?
They're in the pancreas, honey.
Oh.
It's okay. Just nod and smile.
Okay.
Nod and smile.
Thank you, Kathy.
I'm sorry. What are you, a doctor?
No. I've just been involved with diabetes for like 2 decades and worked with the disabled. So
okay.
Comes with the territory.
I got you. I got you. Well, I'm very ignorant about the internal map of human anatomy. That you're right. That is Kathy's area, not mine.
But I will let you go. But I'm having a feeling that, in a couple of months, as this process, because I think the whole racial thing is something that the Democrats have stepped into, handed to them by the corporate media.
Yeah.
So there was no there.
No, there wasn't. Although, now, Charles, I've gotten a couple of emails from listeners who identify themselves as being Americans with some African descent. And I've got a couple of emails from people who say, no, you don't quite get it, Malloy, what she said.
really was a pissy statement. She was making a racist point. And just like I told the caller from Chicago, this is one of those times that I'm trapped, I guess, inside my whiteness. I can't see that statement as being the statement she made as somehow a put down of King and an uplift of LBJ. Now maybe that's because, you know, I'm not a dumbass and I understand that it takes. Andrew Young and Dr. King and Hosea Williams, all from Atlanta here. Hosea Williams used to say that Andrew Young and Hosea would go to a city. Hosea would raise hell, kick up a lot of dust, get arrested, threaten to take on the white establishment. Andy Young would come in and say, look, we can work this out. It was a good cop, bad cop thing. And I don't quite understand why Hillary Clinton's statement is offensive to black people, but it's because I'm white, I guess.
That may be it was as vile as I find her. I don't believe she's a racist. It was a stupidly phrased.
Well, I don't believe she's a racist any more than any white person in America. And I think all white people in America, unless somehow they figured out a way to transcend it. And I'm not saying some people haven't. I know I haven't. I still fight with it every day. But I don't think Hillary is any more or less of a racist than anyone else. And I didn't find the statement offensive. What I found offensive was the way the media immediately went after it to try to cause the American public to sit back and say, yep, yep, see, look at those Democrats. Charles, I got to leave there. Thanks for checking in, pal. Charles?
Yeah, night to you, too.
Okay, take care. What was that? The Leghorn, the Foghorn?
He said that Bush would probably try to bomb the Isles of Langerhorn, which are in, and probably the Haversian Canals as well.
Oh, God.
Tell me where those are.
Yeah, and I have to sleep with you tonight, don't I?
And my Haversian Canals.
Yeah. See you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Thanks for participating. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.